He got a free look at that one under instructions from Bill McKechnie with a 3-0 count. One man out in the sixth inning. Boisel working from a set. There goes the rush there. And there's a drive to right field for a solid base hit. Second is all the way to third base as Holmes throws into Sankey. Runners on first and third. And Boisel is on the rope.
Jim Higgins will be the next batter. Robinson lined a solid single in the right field. One of the most solid hits of the ballgame and his sixth of the series in 19 trips. Jim Higgins has one hit. He singled a left in the second inning and one down swinging in the fourth inning. And incidentally, with Mr. Lemon batting back to Mr. Higgins, the Clevelanders have a nine-man baseball team in the field today because Lemon is a good hitter. He hit five home runs through the regular season play. Higgins has four hits in 17 trips. Batting solid. Bill Summers stepped into the breach. He looked over in the direction of the Cleveland dugout, pointed to the pitcher. It was difficult to understand just what was intended. The outfield is first to the left. Tucker on third, Robinson on first. One man out. Boys are in trouble. He takes his pitch. Here's the pitch. Will he miss? He caught a fastball over him. One strike to go. Cleveland has 2 runs, 6 hits. The Boston Braves have 1 run, 5 hits. Boysville has that one strike count. He takes his pitch. He delivers. Foul tip. That one went right back against Bill Salkello's skin. Bill has been a target frequently in this series. He injured a groin muscle when running during one of the games at Braves Field, but very gamely played yesterday and hit a home run. And then a little earlier in this ballgame, when Boudreau tried to pick off play, Mr. Lemon hit him right in the seat of the baseball pants with a throw to second base. And that time, a fast foul tip struck his chin guard. But he took it off. He stopped slow with a count of 2 strikes on Jim Higgins waiting for the next one. Boysville gets set. He catches. Inside. Just barely inside. He can put the back swing and then finally decided against it and backed away. So the count is 1-2. Cleveland leads 2-1 in the sixth game of the series and 3-2 in the 5 games played thus far. Boysville takes his pick. He throws it. There's a ground ball. That one goes to Elliott. Elliott follows to second. Second to first. And it is lost and it is 3-1. Hennigan's throw. The first paint was poor. It was high. It struck the heel of Earl Ferguson's glove and he knocked it down as the Braves blew a perfect opportunity to retire the side with a double play. Tucker's scoring. Well, Negan's field is short. No error is short. Keegan? Keegan is given credit for driving in a run. He's on first base with 2 men out. The play was 5-4. Elliott is 70, and Bob Lemon comes back. Boysville, with luck, could have been out of the inning. But the Braves have consistently been unable to match Cleveland's double play. Here's the pitch. There goes a ground ball right to Ferguson. He steps on first to retire the side as Bob Lemon goes right after their first hit. 1-2 runs for Cleveland in the inning. 2 hits, no errors, a base on ball, and a runner left. And at the end of 5.5 innings of play, the score is Cleveland 3-1. When a ball player gets a hold of a bat that bangs out hit, he doesn't want to fight with it. That's the way Eddie Pellegrini of the St. Louis Browns felt about his veteran Gillette Razor until... But here's Eddie to tell you the story.
All fans are all across my old Gillette Razor. Well, on the trade one night recently, I tried a friend's new Super Speed Razor.
And you like it?
I sure did. In fact, I bought one for myself. Then we got the Chicago.
But you still saw that.
Jim, I wouldn't part with it if I couldn't get another good price.
Sam, you'll say the same when you try the modern Gillette Super Speed Razor. It changes life instantly and makes saving a thing. Part one with a 10-point suspension. A big dollar 59 for only a dollar.
Cleveland came up with 2 runs in the first half of the sixth inning. As Joe Gordon hit his fourth World Series home run, his first in this one, and the Braves missed a double play. So Cleveland now has 3 runs, 6 hits, no errors, 6 men left, and Lemon is within 1 run while facing an exactly similar situation to game number 2, in which he was the winner by a 4-1 score. Bob Elliott is the batter. He had 2 home runs yesterday to tie the all-time National League World Series record, and he has 2 infield hits today. There's a drive to right center. Jim has a left to right to bases. Latoni goes over fast, cuts it down, and guns a throw into Gordon as Elliott goes back to first. A fine defensive play by Gordon, who aims from right field into right center to hold Elliott to his third straight single. Elliott on first base. There's wild effectivity again in the Cleveland bullpen as Mark Richards comes up. And mindful of the fact that he hit a home run a little bit earlier in the series, the Boston Braves partisans are beginning to whoop it up a little. Richard is a left-hander. Here's the pitch. There's a ground ball across to Gordon. Gordon throws to Boudreau. Boudreau back to first. Double play. And Cleveland has come up with its eighth double play of the series. five open. Back of Bob Lemon, by the way. The Cleveland double play combination has been bringing. Three double plays in support of Lemon today, and two in the second game of the series. That one was Gordon to Boudreau to Robinson. So there are two men out. And the batter is Bill Saltell. Bill has drawn five bases on balls in the series. He has a home run. He's a left-handed batter. And the first pitch is a fastball that just fires its way over the plate. One strike. Here's the windup. The pitch. And it is one and one. That hits within five. Lemon stands on the mound. Saltell stands almost straight away in the left-hand batter's box. Here it comes. Strike called. He slowed up a little line in the outfield to set to the right, and the shot is one ball, two strikes. Both scoreboards are in operation here at Bays Field. Both the old and the new for the benefit of fans who are seated all around them. Cleveland leading, 3-1. Inside, that one moves Saltell back and a count of 2-2. The hits are even up, six for each team. This has been an hell of a ball game, like the one Steve Dromek won from Johnny Sainz. The disposition of the infield is to the right. Here's the windup. There's a ground foul to the right of the plate. It goes down the first base line and is being chased down by the Cleveland Indian bat boy. Feller, Gromek, and Kleiman are all out in the bullpen, available for relief duty in the event they're needed, and they have wound up at various times. Feller usually winds up nearly every day. He believes in taking some regular pitching exercise, so that is in no way a hint that he may see service in the event Lemon weakens. Lemon so far has shown not the slightest chance that he will do so. He delivers. There's a ground ball that goes to Gordon. Joe is up with it. He waits for Robinson to cover and throws Saltell out. 4-3, second to first. Mr. Gordon was the start of that half inning. No runs, one hit, no errors, none left. So in six innings, the Braves have one run, six hits, and they have left five men on base. And Mr. Bob Elliott has had half of the six hits with three singles, and he scored the only run. The first scoring took place in the third inning when Mitchell led off with a double inside the left field line. After Doby went out, he held second. But then Boudreau hit a fly ball down the right field line, and Holmes, after a hard run, dropped it for a two-base hit. The Braves tied the score in the fourth inning when, with one out, Elliott beat out a slow roller down the third base line. Rick acquired the last Saltell walk and McCormick single. And then Cleveland took a 3-1 lead in the sixth inning. Now we pause 10 seconds for station identification. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.
You'll hear Queen Crude immediately following today's World Series game over WOR, New York.
This is Jim Britt back at Bray Field on the banks of the Charles River in Boston, where the sixth World Series game score stands Cleveland 3, Boston Braves 1. Cleveland was confident of wrapping up yesterday, but the Braves erupted with a display of power that was unprecedented in this series. Dale Mitchell is the leadoff batter. He has a double in three trips. He's the Cleveland left fielder. Bill Boydell still on the mound for the Braves. And there goes a fly ball to right center field. Mike McCormick goes back, stands, and waits for it. He takes it for the first out. A routine fly ball. That's the second time Mitchell has flied out to center field. But over in the Boston Braves, both ends, Vaughn and Barrett are winding up. That obviously is because Boydell is slated to be the seventh Boston batter in the last half of the seventh inning. Larry Doby, the batter. Boydell, in four tries, has been able to retire him only once. He's hit twice and walked once. Ball one. One ball, no strike. That was a drive to center field. A hard line smash that dropped safely. And it's a base hit. That's the third hit for Doby off Boydell. And incidentally, it gives Larry a total of seven hits in the series, which, if my record is correct, is top. Elliott has seven now, too. Elliott and Doby are tied with seven hits.
Lubu's out of batter. He doubled in the first Cleveland run. He's right here. There's a pitch up, but no throw was made at first as Doby broke the seal.
Doby is very fast. The attendance is 40,103. That's capacity here at Bray Field. One ball, no strike. The pitch. Low inside. The count. Two balls, no strikes. It looked for an instant as though Boudreau was either going to bunt or intended to bluff a bunt, even with one out. Boudreau was hit right on the small of the bat by one of Boydell's pitches in the first inning. Then he doubled down the line in right field to drive in a run in the third, and he hoisted a fly to left in the fifth inning. So he has one out of two officially today, and six out of 21 in the series.
Toby is bluffing, and he is almost picked off. A fast throw over to first base, and he got back by one hand. He didn't slide. He just fell forward and grabbed the bag. The outfield is set to the left. Boyzell is standing back of the rubber. Now he starts to take the stretch. As Toby starts edging off, he draws another throw, but gets back easily this time, under Mel Harder's instructions. And time is called for an instant as Toby throws off the bag. And as he ties the shoelace on his right baseball shoe, Mel Harder kneels down and confers with him. Two balls, not right. One man out, Toby on first. The seventh inning, Cleveland leading 3-1. Here's the pitch. There's a ground foul down the third baseline. That one missed being an extra base hit by a margin of about 3 feet. Cleveland scored one run in the third, and two of the fans that time were so eager to capture that souvenir ball out in the field that they fell right over the flag, great bunting, and got it, of course. The count, two balls, one strike. The great Cleveland manager is having a good series for himself, who drove back from that crutch. Boyzell stretches. There goes the runner, and a foul ball will bring him back. A high foul out of play to run the count to 2-2. Toby turned around and started back and was halfway back to first base even before the ball dropped down in the first baseline. Two strikes, two balls to count. Today, possibly it's because today's crowd is just a little less than half of yesterday's, the excitement of the two dugouts even seems to be missing. There's not much chatter, except some occasional bench jockeying. 2-2 to count. The pitch. There's a ground ball, of course, to Elliott. Elliott throws to Stanky. That's one. Stanky to first. Double play. Elliott to Stanky to Torkelson. And the Braves have finally managed to complete an around-the-horn double play for their third swing kill of the series. And everybody is up now as the first half of the seventh occurs. At the end of 6.5 innings of play, the score is Cleveland 3, Boston Braves 1. Last inning, you heard Eddie Pellegrini of the St. Louis Browns say he thought his old Gillette was tough until he tried a friend's Gillette Super Speed Razor. Fans, it stands to reason that over the years, Gillette technicians have made many improvements in the convenience and shaving qualities of Gillette Razor. Yes, and if you're not using the improved Gillette Super Speed Razor, you can't imagine what you're missing. This is the easiest shaving, most convenient razor ever. Among other features, it has a notch positioning bar for use with a Gillette dispenser. Just zip out a blade, put it in place, twist the handle, and the razor closes. Beautifully designed, superbly made, this is a precision instrument. It can't jam, can't clog, and you don't have to be a locksmith to change blades instantly. Enjoy modern shaving satisfaction. Get a Gillette Super Speed Razor plus 10-blade Gillette dispenser. A big $1.50 value for a dollar. Cleveland collected no runs, one hit in that seventh inning, left no one on. The Indians had a total of 3 runs, 7 hits so far in this game. And the leadoff batter to oppose Bob Lemon in the seventh will be Mike McCormick, who has 1 hit and 2 trips, 6 out of 21. And it was he who scored Bob Elliott with the Braves' only run in the fourth. The Braves trail 1-3. Running pitchers, and it's a strike call. It's getting very cloudy overhead, very dark and somewhat ominous looking, as though there will be, after all, a threat of rain. One strike to count. Lemon takes his windup, and McCormick looks at one outside. That was a curveball that counts 1-1. Actually, although he has yielded an earned run in this game, Lemon has been just about as effective in this one as he was in the first, when he allowed 8 hits but shattered them. Ball takes his windup, pitches, swing and a miss. He broke off a curveball, letter high near the outside, and the count is 1-2. Billy Southward is coaching at third base. Freddie Fitzsimmons is doing the coaching at first. Lefty Warnspawn and Red Barrett is still the Braves warm-up pitcher. A windup, but before Lemon could start the pitch, McCormick stepped out. Phil Summers called time. Mike indicated that he had something in his eye. Lemon standing on the rubber. Here's your time. Here's the pitch. Outside. Curveball that missed the outside corner. Not by much. 2-2 the count. Eddie Sankey is in the on-deck circle. And there will doubtless be a pinch hitter for Big Bill Boyzell in this frame, since he is scheduled to be the third batter. Here it comes. Swing and a miss. Strike three. Lemon fired a fastball, and that is his first strikeout of this game. He saved it for the trick bat in 7-3. Eddie Sankey hasn't had an opportunity to hit in this game. He has walked twice and has been left-handed both times. In the third inning, he got as far as third base on a bunt and a single. And then in the fourth inning, he got just as far as first.
He's a right-hander. He swings and misses. That's about as hard as you'll see Tanky swing. He went after a curveball. One strike to count. One man out on the Braves trail, 1-3. This is another of the low-scoring games. With defense, the outstanding factor. Lemon winds up, pitches, outside. He wastes that one, and the count is 1-1. One ball, one strike. The outfield set to the left. Billy Southworth is hopeful of sending this into a seventh and final World Series game, but Boudreau is supremely confident. Strike, call, a fastball for call strike two, and the count is 1-2. Feller and Gromek are warming up for Cleveland as a precautionary measure. There's no one on. Lemon is in no trouble in this frame. He yielded at least one hit in every inning save the fifth. He pitches. There's a slow roller that goes to third base. Kellner comes up. It's off balance. Throws. And he gets it. Bill Stewart held up his decision, seemed to be weighing it for an instant, and then gave the out sign. Yankee's speed has been reduced as a result of the injury. And that was accountable for the fact that he was unable to beat that out since it was bobbled briefly by Kellner. But McCormick is going to bat for Bill Boytel. Frank McCormick has a batting average of .250. He's had one hit and four trips. And that means that either Warren Spahn or Red Barrett is likely to come in and replace Bill Boytel in the eighth inning. Two men out as McCormick faces Lennon. Lennon, incidentally, has allowed only one hit over the last three full innings. He pitches and throws a sidearm pick outside for ball one. One ball, no strike. The Braves haven't been able to find the range on the fences in their own ballpark, but they did so yesterday at Cleveland. Joe Gordon, however, found the range for his fourth World Series home run today in the sixth inning. There's a ground ball to Kellner, right back of the bag. He looks it over, fires the first in time for the out. He seems to be reading a signature on it, for instance, before unloading. So that's a 1-2-3 inning for Lemon. No runs, no hits, no errors. None left. And at the end of seven innings of play, the Boston Braves trail by a score of 1-3. Warren Spahn goes over to get his jacket out of the bullpen, and it is he who is being called in for the second consecutive day in a relief role. Yesterday, his pitching was superb. He allowed a double to Lou Boudreau, but he struck out five of the last 6 men at Cleveland in one of the all-time great clutch exhibitions of World Series history. To refresh your memory, yesterday, when he came into the ballgame, the bases were empty with one out in the fourth inning. He got by the first batter, Bob Feller, then walked a man, and then in his last 5 1/3 innings, he struck out 7. And in the eighth inning, he struck out Gordon, Keltner, and Boone in order. Then in the ninth inning, after Robinson had flied out, he fanned Hegan and Joe Tipton in succession. The score is Cleveland, 3 runs, 7 hits, no errors. The Boston Braves, 1 run, 6 hits, and no errors. Spahn will have to oppose Gordon, Keltner, and Tucker. He didn't pitch to Tucker yesterday, by the way, but the first time he faced Gordon and Keltner, he struck them out. Yesterday, he wasn't throwing his curveball for much purpose other than that of wasting it. He was keeping the Indians constantly guessing by an assortment of slow and fast stuff. He was changing up. His fastball was extremely effective. And two or three of the Clevelanders afterwards said that his pitching had been tougher than any they'd seen in this series. Cleveland has had some great pitching performances, and there have been 3 shutouts, you recall. The others were Sane, Bearden, and Gromek in that order. Joe Gordon has 1 hit in 3 trips today, his fourth World Series home run. He's a right-hander. Spahn gets up. Here's the pitch. And there goes a drive towards left field. Richards goes over fast, takes it, falls down, rolls over the ball. And it happened almost under the feet of the National League left field foul judge umpire, Dave Pennelly. And there, incidentally, is another reason why having those umpires stationed out on the line is an excellent idea, because Pennelly was only 10 feet away from Richard when he described the somersault, and he was perfectly positioned to see that he had held the ball. Keltner, the batter. Keltner has no hits in 3 trips. Here comes swinging it in. He guessed. He seemed to guess on that. He held his swing until the last instant and then swung very quickly at a fastball. One strike. The outfield is deep to the left. Bond delivers. Throws another fastball outside and the count is 1-1. Red Barrett continues to warm up for the Boston Braves. And Vernon Bickford is also loosening up. Spahn takes his wind up with one out of the nine. There's a ground ball that bounces away from Spahn. Dart picks it up, throws to first. Not in time. And it's scored base hit. That's the second hit he's allowed in a relief role. It bounded away from Spahn, was picked up on the dead run by Algar, and Keltner has just collected his second hit of the series. He now has a total of 2 hits and 21 trips, but there were 19 unsuccessful at bats in between. He had one of the series' most dismal slumps. Thurman Tucker, the center fielder up. He fouled the third base, grounded to second, walked and scored the third run. There goes a drive to right field. It's in there. Donnie Holmes fields it on the dead run and holds the runners to first and second. He steps right into that very first pitch that was fired to him by Warren Spahn, and now Eddie Robinson comes up with runners on first and second. Spahn is not the puzzle to the Indians this afternoon that he was yesterday. Yesterday, Lou Boudreau was the only hitter, getting a double in the eighth inning, and then the next three men were struck out. But now, with one out, and it took a fine catch by Ricketts to retire Gordon, Robinson is up with two men on. He has one out of three. Eddie is left-handed. Strike called. That was a slow curveball that came over. Keltner on second base. Tucker on first base. And the Indians are in scoring position again. They now have 9 hits. One hit more than they had behind Lemon in his first victory. Spahn takes a stretch. Looks at second. Pitcher. Threw a curveball that missed the outside corner and the count is 1-1. One ball, one strike. Bill McKechnie holds up one finger to be certain that the runners realize the situation is one out. Tucker has a man-sized lead at first. Keltner takes a longer one. Here comes. There's a drive that goes to the right field for a base hit. And here comes Keltner sprinting for the plate with a fourth Indian run. Runners are on first and third as three consecutive hits rattle off Warren Spahn's delivery, and Cleveland takes a lead of 4-1. That was Robinson's sixth hit of the series. Keltner scored. Tucker went all the way to third base. And we're looking down below to see whether or not Billy Southworth intends to make an appearance. Jim Hegan is getting ready to bat. And Spahn apparently is going to stay in. Cleveland leads 4-1. That was the score by which Lemon won the second game. Spahn takes a stretch. Here comes. Outside, fastball. Tucker on third base, Robinson on first base. And Robinson's line drive was well over Ferguson's head down the right field line with Holmes running fast to cover. One ball, no strike. There's a throw to first base. Robinson is back in time under Mel Harder's shout of look out. This is the gloomiest day we've had. It has turned into it, weather-wise. Another throw to first base, but Robinson is back easily. Cleveland now has 4 runs, 10 hits. And the Indians are still in a rallying position. The outfield is deep to the left. The pitch, swing and a miss. That was a fastball and the count is 1-1. The Indians broke a 1-run tie, which lasted through the first 5 innings of play. Time called for an instant. Lou Boudreau hollered from the dugout. He then got ready to step out. And then Bill Summers insisted that the pitcher wait. The infield is in. The stretch, the pitch, swing and a miss. That was a fastball, letter high to the outside, and the count is 1-2. The situation in the sixth game of the World Series is inning number 8. Thanks to that fine catch by Rickards, who held the ball off Gordon's bat after somersaulting, Spahn has been touched up so far for only 1 run. This could have been a very sizable inning, and still may be. Keegan steps out of the box, rubs some dirt into his hands, is back in again. He's a tall, well-built, good-looking catcher with a great future. Spahn is ready. Playing a miss for strike three. A fastball. That's the third Cleveland strike out of the game. Bob Lemon is coming out of the dugout to bat. He has been a great competitor in this series. In 16 innings, the Braves have reached in for only two runs, one of them unearned. And in 16 innings, if you're further at a suit, he has scattered 14 hits. And that is mightily effective pitching on any occasion. Robinson on first, Tucker on third base, two men out for Cleveland. Juan getting ready to pitch. Here it comes. Foul ball back over the top for strike one. That was a fastball. Baseball is a strange game. And I presume that right now the Braves partisans and Billy Southwest are wondering how it is possible for a team to score 11 runs one day and only one the next. The answer, of course, is in the pitching. There's a throw to first base, but no pickoff, no tag. Robinson was able to get back safely. This is the only stage of the game, by the way, in which there were three successive hits. Here comes. Curveball high, and the count is 1-1. One scoreboard has a count of one ball and one strike. The other scoreboard has a count of two balls and one strike. The official scoreboard says 1-1. Lawrence Barnes takes a stretch. Robinson has a long lead. And he gives it to pick him off. The throw is to the plate. And they have Tucker chopped off. Here's the throw. And he's out. He tried to knock the ball out of Southwell's hands with a rush. And I'm afraid that Tucker's glasses were broken. He smashed into Southwell. The play, incidentally, went from Barnes to Torgerson to Southwell to Elliott to Southwell, who tagged Tucker. And I fear Tucker's glasses were broken on the play. So at the end of 7.5 innings of play, the score is Cleveland 4, Boston Braves 1. Men think of getting a world-famous Gillette Tech Razor with 5 Gillette Blue Blades for only 49 cents. Believe me, that's a lot for the money. With the Gillette Tech, you get shaves that are smooth, clean, and refreshing. That's why more men shave with this razor than with all other makes combined. The Gillette Tech has a solid bar guard that sets up whiskers as a barber does. Its non-skid tread protects you from nicks and cuts. The blade is held rigidly, eliminating edge vibration. The tech is non-clogging, rinses instantly. Yes, and the Gillette Tech is a terrific shaving bargain. So to enjoy real shaving comfort and save money, buy a Gillette Tech razor with 5 Gillette Blue Blades at the amazingly low price of 49 cents. The Cleveland Indian bat boy has gone to the clubhouse to return with a new pair of eyeglasses for Thurman Tucker. What happened on the play was this. Eddie Robinson, who was on first base, presumably dared Spahn to pick him off. The Indian strategy was designed to make Spahn throw to first base to give Tucker a chance to score at the plate if anything went awry. But Earl Torgerson very quickly threw the ball home. They may be asking the Boston Braves whether or not they will permit a courtesy player to go into center field until Tucker gets his eyeglasses. What happened is Bill Summers has explained to Billy Southworth that he wants the game to be held up until Tucker's glasses arrive, and the bat boy has just come out with him to save the day. Tucker appeared to be cut very slightly. The crowd is giving him the treatment because of the way he ran into the catcher, but that's baseball. The idea was for him to try to score on the play. The play, by the way, was Spahn, the pitcher, to Torgerson, the first baseman, to the catcher, Bill Southwell, to Elliott, the third baseman, back to Southwell, who got the put out, and Robinson, who had gotten to second base, was not credited with a steal. Cleveland leads by a score of 4-1. And Tommy Holmes is the batter in the last half of the eighth inning. Lennon pitches, and there's a drive that goes to center field for a base hit. Holmes leads off with his second hit of the ballgame. That is hit number 7 for the Boston Braves. And it's Holmes' fifth hit of the series. It brings up Alvin Dart. He beat out a bunny first time at bat. Was doubled up as Torgerson fly to Tucker, who made a sensational catch and throw to first. Then he hit into a double play and grounded back to the mound. Dart is a right-hander. Here comes. Strike calls. Feller and Cormac are warming up in the Cleveland Hotel. Cleveland has a 4-1 lead in the last half of the eighth inning as the Braves try to stage a desperation rally in an effort to push the series into a seventh and deciding game. Otherwise, this is the clinching victory as far as Cleveland is concerned. The outfield is set to the left. The infield in a little. Outside, that was a slider, and the count is 1-1. Dark started to go after it, held away from it. Lemon throws the slider sparingly. A sinker ball is his stock and trade, and he has an excellent one. Ray Scarborough was telling me about it a while back. Here's the pitch. Strike, ball. That caught the outside corner. Dark let it come, and the count is 1-2. Dark has had 3 hits and 23 appearances in the series. Kevin Keltner is standing just inside the third baseline, guarding it very closely. Tommy Holmes is being held right close to first base by Eddie Robinson. Here's the pitch. There's a drive that goes to right field. Kobe comes in fast. He takes it, and Holmes has to go back. Dark was trying to hit the ball into right field, but it stayed up in the air long enough for Dolby to make the play. Gene Pearden has joined Feller and Gromek in a wild-up capacity. So there's one out in the Braves' eighth inning. And Earl Parkinson comes up. The Braves need 3 runs to push this game into a tie series. Parkinson, who was the top batter of the series for the Braves, has no hits in 3 trips today. Lemon has slowed him down. He's a left-handed batter. And he hits a drive down the right field line. That is in there for extra base. There goes Holmes to third base. Parkinson going to second base, sliding in safely. Holmes to third. Lemon is going to stay in. Boudreau has already given him a reassuring pat on the back. Ferguson just collected his third double, his seventh hit, to tie Bob Elliott and Larry Doby. And with Bob Elliott up, Bob has 3 consecutive singles. 2 of them infield hits. He has scored the Boston run. The catch that Doby made at the expense of Dark. Now Holmes has mightily important because with Dark trying to hit the ball into right field on the hit and run, Goldie came in fast and spirited and turned Holmes back. There's 1 out, 2 on. That was right up close to the ears for ball 1, a high fast one. 1 ball, no strike. Cleveland has 4 runs, 10 hits. The Braves have 1 run, 8 hits. That's the total to which they were held by Lemon in his second winning game. Up 4-1. He stands on the rubber. He's taking plenty of time. He's very deliberate. He winds up. He pitches and throws a sidearm pitch inside. That was a fastball, 2-0. Elliott is up there hopeful that the same kind of a pitching mistake that Bob Feller twice made against him yesterday will be repeated. And Lemon is bearing down all the harder, determined not to do so. 2 balls. No strike. Here comes high, all 3-0, and Feller, Gromek, and Dearden just got a sign by the relay system to the bullpen to bear down a little more vigorously. As Lou Boudreau turned and looked out to the left of the flagpole where the Cleveland bullpen is hidden. 3-0 to count. Here's the windup. Strike follows. Elliott was almost down on one knee that time, attempting to distract the pitcher, Bob Lemon, so that he would throw him ball 4. It's a 3-1 situation, with Holmes on third base, Ferguson on second base. Lemon standing on the mound. Elliott uses a very close chance to make play and pull the ball well to left. Here it comes. Wait a minute! Fast ball that came blazing like a streak right over the plate. And Elliott took a savage cut at it to run the string to 3-2. Three balls, 2 strikes. That's the fourth base on ball across Lemon. And with the bases loaded and 1 out for the Braves, manager Lou Boudreau calls the halt. He raised his hand on high, comes in a way that would indicate there's got to be a new pitcher.
He takes the ball from Lemon. Bill Summers makes a sign to the bullpen. And the right field foul line umpire, Joe Paparella, goes over to be certain that the new pitcher comes in promptly. Lemon is driven out after 7 1/3 innings of his second World Series game. And Gene Bearden, who authored a 5-hit, 2-0 shutout against the Boston Braves, is going to come in. So there is a possibility that Rickert, a left-hander, will be replaced. There's the announcement. Gene Bearden, who is the great, courageous left-hander. He survived a torpedo American naval ship in Kula Gulf. He still carries some of the steel that was necessary to reinforce a fractured knee and an injured skull. He's a tremendously likable left-hander. And you'll recall that he took a 5-hit shutout against the Boston Braves on the 8th of October. And in that game, one Brave reached third, and only two other Braves got as far as second base. Clint Connector, a Texan and a Braves outfielder, has a bat in his hand down in the Boston Braves dugout. Billy Southworth has moved in, and he just nodded his head to him, and Connector is trying to come up and bat in place of left-handed Marv Rickert. The bases are loaded with one out for the Boston Braves in the eighth inning, and Cleveland leads 4-1. The condition of the playing field here at Braves Field, notwithstanding the fact there have been some football games played on it, was put into excellent World Series condition by Al Oliver and his capable crew of groundskeepers. Clint Connector has just made the announcement, and for the benefit of those who didn't already recognize him, the information, together with his numeral, came over the public address system. There's one man out, and Cleveland has a 4-1 lead. Once before in this game, the Braves had the bases loaded, but there were two men out at the time, and they were left loaded. Connector is a right-handed batter. He stands in the batter's box. The outfield is set to the left. He has no hits in this series. Inside, ball one. Connector has batted three previous times in the series. His first hit was a fastball that was inside. Holmes is on third base. Torgerson is on second base. Bob Elliott is on first base. The result of Holmes' single, Torgerson's double, and Elliott's base on ball. It was the fourth walk the Braves have been given in this game, and their 15th of the series. Here it winds up. Here comes. Curve ball inside. Ball two. He threw a jug-handled curve ball, for which many left-handers are noted. Two balls, no strikes. Bill Southfield is down there in the upper deck area. Phil Macy has two blood blisters on his left hand, but he has a bat in his hand at the moment. Here comes Kike Call, the fastball. 2-1. You remember in Chicago, Macy, while trying to bunt, bunted the ball with his bat and with his fingers. In Cleveland, I'm sorry, not Chicago. Macy is from Chicago. 2-1. Here's the windup. Here he can get set. There goes a drive to center field. Going back for it is Tucker. He takes it. And here comes Holmes sprinting in with a run. There goes Torgerson on his way to third base. That was a wicked pass that went straight away to center field. And Holmes came in after the catch. Macy is going to come up in place of Salcarello. And Lou Boudreau comes in to say something to Jim Hegan, the catcher. The score is 4-2. They're right on first and third. Ferguson moving up on that wicked smash, as it was well tagged. It was a low line drive. And Tucker was able to get back over it. It was hit straight away to center field. Macy has scored a run, but he has no hits in 7 trips in this series. Billy Southworth is pulling all the strength he knows how. This is Bearden's second appearance of the series. Two men are out. Cleveland leads by a score of 4-2.
He's up in front of us, as a matter of fact.
Inside.
Ball one. And waiting, hopefully, in the on-deck area is Mike McCormick, who drove in the first
Boston run of the game. Cleveland broke a tie with two runs in the sixth inning.
One of them was Joe Gordon's home run.
His first of the series,
his fourth in World Series competition.
The Indians added another run in the top half of the eighth inning. There's the stretch. Bearden gets set. He pitches. There goes the drive down the left field line, and the ball is off the wall. It is 4-3, and it is a double. Runners on second and third. Bill Macy made a bid for a home run and hit a long double over left fielder Dale Mitchell's head off the left field wall. Bearden will stay in. There are runners on second and third. Elliott was held up because Mitchell played the ball superbly, and had Elliott attempted to score, he would have been out at the plate. But the Braves are within one run of a tie. Two men are out, and Mike McCormick comes up. McCormick has an opportunity to break the ball game wide open. And a new left fielder is going to go into the ball game. Kennedy will go to left. Kennedy has a strong throwing arm, a very strong throwing arm, and that obviously is accountable for the maneuver. Bob Kennedy has been used in the series before. Matter of fact, he drove in a run, but he has been sent previously to right field. Now Kennedy is in left field, Tucker in center, and Dobie in right, with Mike McCormick up. McCormick has 6 hits and 22 trips. He's a right-handed batter opposing left-handed Gene Bearden, with Macy and Elliott on second and third. Strike called. The first pitch was a fastball that caught the outside corner. This is the eighth inning, and the Braves have fought their way back to within one run of a tie. Here it comes. There's the ground ball. Back to Bearden. He waits for Robinson to cover. Fires to first to retie the rally. Right back to the mound as McCormick tried to hit one through the middle. Two runs, three hits. No errors, one walk. Two runners were left on base. And at the end of eight innings of play, Cleveland has 4 runs, 10 hits, no errors. The Braves have 3 runs, 9 hits, and no errors. Now we pause 10 seconds for station identification. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.
This is WOR, New York, the Mutual station that brings you the World Series and other top sports events the year round.
Gene Bearden is scheduled to be the first batter in the ninth inning, and then he'll be followed by Bob Kennedy and Larry Doby.
Please, for the Braves, Mike McCormick, number 31.
Mike McCormick has moved over to left field for the Boston Braves as he's scoring the game, and Canaster has gone into center field, but he is in the batting order in place of Marv Rickard. And Phil Macy, of course, who came through with a pinch double, his first hit of the series, by the way, is doing the catching. So the Braves have a revised batting order and a lineup as well. Canaster is in center field, and Mike McCormick, who was in center field, has moved over to left. Phil Macy is the new catcher, and the first batter scheduled to come up for Cleveland is Gene Bearden. You'll recall Bob Lemon was at bat in the eighth inning when the Indians, with Robinson breaking from first, risking a pickoff, tried to set up a double steal, and Thurman Tucker was out trying to score. Mr. Bearden has a single and a double in this series and a very handsome batting average of 667. Cleveland has a lead of 4-3. Warren Spahn still on the mound for the Boston Braves in his second relief role. Here's the pitch. Ball one. One ball, no strikes. Here it comes. Foul tip. Bearden went down on his left knee after swinging and tipping it right back against the screen, and the count is one ball, one strike. This has been one of the most exciting ball games of the entire series. The outfield is just a little to the right of straight away. Here comes a fastball high, and the count is two balls, one strike. The sign has just gone out to right field, and Vern Bickford and Red Barrett start warming up again for the Boston Braves. Vaughn winds up. He pitches. Ball three. Low outside. 3-1. And Macy steps across the plate and fires one back. Macy's double, by the way, was just about halfway up on the left field wall. Here's the windup. Swing and a miss. Bearden was hopeful that that pitch would be to his liking. And when it came in just above the knees, he swung. And the count now is 3-2. He's knocking the dirt, some of the clay out of his spikes. Bill McKechnie is coaching at third. The first base coach is still Mel Harder. Vaughn takes that big windup. He strides, delivers. Strike three, swinging. That's his second consecutive strikeout, by the way, and his ninth for the past 2 days. He struck out Hegan in the eighth inning. One man out, and Bob Kennedy is the batter. Kennedy made an appearance earlier in the series in a batter's role, and he singled and drove in a run. He's a right-handed batter. Strike called. That was a fairly slow pitch. One strike to count. Here it comes. Fastball low inside, and the count is 1-1. Kennedy has one hit in one time at bat and one run driven in this series. It was a single. Vaughn takes a big windup. Swing and a miss. There was a gigantic curveball, one of his specialties. He didn't throw it much yesterday. The count now is one ball, two strikes. The fourth Cleveland run was scored against Vaughn, by the way. Kennedy sets himself close to the plate. Swing and a miss, strike three. For the second time in as many days, Vaughn has struck out three consecutive Indians. That's 10 strikeouts for the Buffalo New York southpaw in 24 hours. He finished up yesterday and richly deserves credit for the win. Larry Doby is the batter. Larry is one of the three top batters of the series with 7 hits. He has 2 out of 3 today. He's a left-hander. Strike called. That was a slow pitch that caught the outside, and Doby didn't want to go after it. There are 2 men out. First half of the ninth, Cleveland leading 4-3 in an exciting 6th game. That was high and inside, and the count is 1-1. If you're interested in stealing a look at the last of the ninth, Sankey is slated to lead off, and then probably a pinch hitter for Warren Spahn. Here it comes. Swing and a miss, and Doby fell down. That was a curveball right down in the dirt. It bounced in the dirt, and Doby fell into the ball after he completed his swing and missed it. And the ball very nearly bounced up and struck him. One ball, two strikes to count. Here it comes. Foul ball. Very nearly another strikeout. As a matter of fact, if it hadn't been for yesterday when Robinson hit a fly ball to left field, Vaughn might have his name etched in the record book. Because he struck out three, then he missed Robinson and struck out two more. Here's the windup. Strike three! 4 straight strikeouts. In an amazing demonstration of pitching magic, Warren Spahn regained his touch and struck out Hegan in the eighth, Bearden, Kennedy, and Doby in the ninth to run to 13 his strikeout for the past 2 days. Going into the last half of the ninth inning, Cleveland leads 4-3. Right now, with winter coming on, it's a good time to start a life-saving flow of food and clothing to some destitute European family through CARE packages. CARE is a nonprofit organization approved by your government that guarantees delivery of your gift package to a specific individual in Europe. For $10,
you can present 21 and a half pounds of nutritious food to any person or family in 15 European countries. Just send $10 to CARE, C-A-R-E, New York, with your name and address and the name and address of the recipient. You will receive a signed receipt upon delivery. Cleveland leads by a 4-3 score, and Eddie Stanky will be the Braves' leadoff batter in the last of the ninth. He's a right-hander. He's walked twice. Bearden's first pitch is low inside, ball one. The record, incidentally, for the most home runs in a single game in the World Series is Babe Ruth. That's an answer to a query. Three. Bob Elliott tied the all-time National League mark with two yesterday. Bearden delivers. Ball two. That was letter high outside, and it's 2-0. Bearden has faced three batters, and two of them have hit the ball extremely well. Canastri's fly and Macy's double. Here it comes. Strike called. There was to be no denying young Mr. Bearden that time. He fired one right down the middle. And it's 2-1. Bob Feller and Steve Dromack are winding up for Cleveland. The Indians are trying to nurse a one-run lead in the ninth inning. There goes a high foul fly ball down the left field line. Kennedy running hard, but he can't get it. It fell out of his reach by about 20 feet out in what normally would be the Boston Braves bullpen. Two balls, two strikes. Both Keltner and Boudreau tried, but Kennedy was the only one who had any chance whatever. The outfield with Stanky up is playing well to the left. And his immediate problem, of course, is to get on base. He wasn't up there to wait Mr. Bearden out. As soon as that first good pitch came over with a count 2-1, he went after it. And now Bearden has him in a 2-2 hole. Bearden winds up. 3-2. That was a curveball that hung high to the outside. Incidentally, it is fairly dark here at Fenway Park. Very cloudy and ominous overhead. But it has been a very happy circumstance that this game went at all. Here it comes. There's a drive foul to left. A wicked line drive that bounces off the facade of the left field boxes. And it's recovered out there by the foul line umpire. Mr. Bearden has at least this edge against the batters in this inning. The darkness, I mean. Because visibility handicaps the batter somewhat on such a day as this when the afternoon wears on. Here's the big one. Ball four. Stanky gets his third walk of the game and his seventh base on balls of the series. There may be a pinch runner. Connie Ryan is going to run for Stanky. And Sibby Sissy will bat for Spahn. Connie Ryan of New Orleans, Louisiana is running for Stanky. And Sibby Sissy of Buffalo, New York, a fellow townsman of Warren Spahn, will bat for him. This is Sissy's first appearance at the plate in the series, but he filled in handsomely for Stanky during the period of Eddie's injury. No one out. Ryan on first base. Bearden takes his stretch. Here's the pitch. Foul ball. He tried to bunt it. Cleveland naturally expects the sacrifice, and both Robinson and third baseman Ken Keltner were quick to come in with the intention of covering the plate. One strike to count. There is no one out. But Billy Southworth is prepared to risk the percentage opportunity of a bunt and sacrifice 50. Ken Keltner is in on the grab down the third baseline. He's sneaking in a little. Here it comes. And it's inside and low. 1-1. Keltner wound up about 50 feet from home plate. 50 is a fair bunter. It's difficult to determine just exactly where he will place the ball. He's very fast. He's one of the fastest base runners the Braves have. And since that's the case, under the Southworth school, he practices bunting, as do Darkin Sorgeson. 1-1 the count. Here it comes. There's the bunt. It's a foul ball, and Hegan throws to first for the double play. Keegan took it. Right out in front of the plate, it was ruled a fair ball, and then he fired it to first base for the ninth double play for Cleveland in the series. Bearden threw him a knuckleball, perhaps. It's difficult to determine from here, but the double play was 2-3, and all he had to do was wait for Robinson to cover first because Ryan was going on it. Two men out, and Tommy Holmes the batter. And some of the fans are already beginning to leave. Convinced, the destiny has been shaped. Strike calls. One strike to count. From a situation with a runner on first base, no one out. An optimistic situation, trailing as they do by one run, 3-4. The Braves now have two men out, no one on. Here's the pitch. Foul ball. And that one is coming up here. The count, two strikes. Incidentally, Cleveland in this game has had four double plays. So they've had six of their nine double plays in support of Bob Lemon and Bearden. There goes a fly ball towards left field. Going back fast is Kennedy. Kennedy gets there, and he takes it. And the Cleveland Indians are the world champions of 1948. And they are leaping joyously as they go off the field. Bearden is being mobbed, as are Lou Boudreau. And out in center field, Tucker and Kennedy come running in arm. The final score, Cleveland, 4 runs, 10 hits, no errors. The Braves, 3 runs, 9 hits, no errors. The winning pitcher, Bob Lemon. The losing pitcher, Big Bill Voisel. And camera flash bulbs are exploding all over the premises as the Braves, Billy Southworth, congratulates Lou Boudreau, and the Indians have tucked away the bunting in baseball's greatest classic. And now here to review the game and feature some of his highlights is Mel Allen.
The 1948 World Series is over, ladies and gentlemen. On a dark and gloomy day in Boston, the 1948 World Series comes to an end with the sun figuratively shining, as a matter of fact, even blazing, insofar as the Cleveland Indians are concerned. For here, in the wigwam of the Boston Braves on the banks of the Charles River, the Cleveland Indians have been crowned champions of the baseball world. The second such honor in 28 years. And down below us on the field is a coatless, but wearing just a thin silk shirt, half-sleeved Bill Veeck, hobbling over from his box behind the Cleveland dugout to the runway to move into the Indians clubhouse to help them celebrate their victory. Along with him is the vice president of the Cleveland Indians ball club, Hank Greenberg. Thus, it's a great day for the Cleveland Indians, who played great ball to be crowned champions of the baseball world. The Indians waited a long time to get into this World Series. The last time they were in was in 1920. They beat the Brooklyn Dodgers to take the World Championship then. And here in 1948, they defeated a very game Boston Braves squad 4-2. Although they did it not without a tremendous battle, although as the series progressed and the Indians assumed a 3-1 advantage, it looked as if it might be a rout, despite the fact that the statistics were so amazingly close and identical. But the Indians had received sensational pitching. The Braves received great pitching, but the Indians seemed to be able to make the most of the base hits that they got in the matter of timeliness. And thus it was that they won the first game 1-0, despite the fact that Bob Feller pitched a two-hitter. Johnny Sain pitched a four-hitter and won it 1-0. In the second game of the series, Bob Lemon beat the Braves 4-1, besting Warren Spahn, who had to have some help from Red Barrett in the fifth inning. In the third game of the series, when the scene shifted to Cleveland, the Indians won it 2-0, with Gene Bearden going all the way, besting Vern Bickford, who had to have some help from Voisel in the fourth, Barrett in the eighth. Thus, over the first three games, all three Cleveland starters stayed in there all the way, as the Indians won 2 out of the first 3. And then in the fourth game, another great pitching duel, with Johnny Sain going for the Braves and Steve Gromek for Cleveland. The Indians won that one 2-1. Thus, in the first four games of the World Series, Lou Boudreau saw his starting pitcher go the distance. Johnny Sain lost a tough ball game, just as he won a tough ball game on opening day. And just as baseball observers is the men who make the typewriters click, the men who write for the newspapers, the radio reporters, the baseball fans themselves, just as they all were about to say, gee whiz, this has been a comparatively dull World Series, inasmuch as pitching has been so predominating, and it has cut down on a great deal of the excitement, the contest on the field being so bitter. All of a sudden, the explosion at Municipal Stadium in Cleveland yesterday in that fifth game, and the Braves came back with their backs to the wall to outslug the Indians 11-5, a home run barrage of five homers by both teams, added a little spice to the baseball wooing on yesterday. And the Braves used Potter, Spahn, and Salkeld, with Spahn coming on in the fourth inning and reaching his full stature as a pitcher in the World Series competition as a relief artist yesterday. And again today, he came back and pitched beautiful ball as he struck out nine of the last 14 men that he faced, including yesterday's and today's games. Bobby Feller started yesterday's game for Cleveland, relieved by Klein in the seventh, Christopher in the seventh. Satchel Paige got in there in the seventh inning to make his World Series appearance, and Moncrief finished up. And today, the Indians finally won out 4-3, despite a belated and exciting Braves rally. 4-3, Cleveland 4 runs, 10 hits, no errors. The Braves 3 runs, 9 hits, and no errors. Perhaps the greatest disappointment in the series, from a personal angle, that is to say, from his personal angle, was that of Bob Feller, a great artist, a great performer through the years, a man who had dreamed of getting into a World Series, a man who had pitched two no-hitters and 10 one-hitters, had accomplished just about everything there was for a pitcher to achieve, except win a World Series game. And yesterday, he was a tremendous picture of dejection as he walked slowly off the hill into the dugout, having been shelled from the mound by the Boston Braves. And thus it was that Bobby Feller, who pitched the two-hitter and lost it opening day, was still unable to come back and reach that goal. But the Indians might win it again next year, and he might have that other chance still. Certainly he'll be looking forward to it, and I know baseball fans everywhere hope that Bob Feller will one day achieve that goal of getting a World Series victory, just as it came perhaps to Walter Johnson, who waited so many years for that opportunity, and who finally got it in the seventh game of a World Series as a relief pitcher after failing in a couple of starts. Well, getting away from Bobby Feller, perhaps the, it's tough to pick out any one guy in a series like this. The pitchers were so tremendous for the most part that you couldn't really single out any one and say he was head and shoulders above the other. Johnny Sain, Warren Spahn, Steve Gromeck, Bob Lemon, all of them. And if I've left out any, I haven't done it intentionally, just mentioning them here and there. But you got to take your hat off to a guy like Gene Bearden, who had the unusual distinction, perhaps he'll never come to a pitcher again, of pitching his team into the World Series in a playoff game, of pitching his team to a World Series victory, and of coming back in relief in the final game of the World Series and holding the World Championship for them. Gene Bearden did a terrific job of pitching for the Cleveland Indians, as he came back, incidentally, with one day's rest to pitch the playoff game against the Red Sox to put the Indians into the World Series. He had pitched on Saturday and beaten the Detroit Tigers. Tigers then beat Feller Sunday, and Bearden came right back Monday to get into the playoff. In Gene Bearden's last 39 and two-thirds innings of pitching, he allowed exactly one earned run. So you got to take your hat off to a guy like that. You got to take your hat off to guys like Bob Elliott, who sparked his team in a tremendous comeback yesterday to prolong the series. And you've got to take your hat off to a fellow like Lou Boudreau, one of the greatest shortstops you've ever seen in your life. I doubt you'll ever see one any better at any time in the future. Well, we could pick out men here and there. They're all great. They're all wonderful. It was a delightful World Series, although it did get off to a slow start because of the great pitching. And so it comes to an end with the Cleveland Indians, the world champions, ladies and gentlemen. We must add this one other thing to Cleveland's nine double plays in the series, with so many of them today coming through to help them win the world's championship. That's all there is, ladies and gentlemen, as we sign off from Braves Field. We got to mention, as our mind wanders, we look out onto the empty field now. You think of such fellows as Larry Doby, who got so many base hits. Larry Doby and Bob Elliott and Earl Torgerson, all of whom got seven hits to lead in total hits. But you could go around, pick out each individual, and show his relative value to the overall picture of presenting for American baseball fandom another exciting World Series. We hope that you've enjoyed it. And so, fans, that's that. The story of another World Series goes into the record. But Gillette's Cavalcade of Sports carries on. Every Friday night, we're on the air coast to coast with a major boxing event of the week. Plan to be at Radio Ringside Friday nights and enjoy the fun. Now, this is Mel Allen saying smooth sailing, smooth shaving, and good afternoon from your host, the Gillette Safety Razor Company, and Jim Britt.
Recorded highlights of today's World Series game will be heard over WOR at 11:30 tonight. Stay tuned now for Queen for a Day, which follows. We wish to thank the La Rosa Macaroni Company, sponsors of the Hollywood Theater of Stars, for relinquishing their broadcast time today in favor of the World Series game. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.